listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
So the Rockets are back in action at in Orlando tonight. Mentioned it before, they're a 15-win team. Orlando's a 13-win team. Rockets have shown some flashes. Now, keep in mind they have 15 wins this year, and seven of them came in one streak.
How could you have seen those flashes? When did you see those flashes?
What do you mean?
The Rockets flashes. When have you seen them?
I've seen them in quarters.
In five-minute increments?
No, legitimately, yeah. When I went to the Pelicans game here, like, you see things that you like. The problem is you're not, yeah, the flashes should be over a four-game stretch, or it really should be over a two-week stretch. That's how you know that you are on the lower end. This is how you know you're going to be drafting high, when your flashes come in quarters.
Yeah, and they're in the midst of a seven-game losing streak.
Yeah. Yeah, and the flashes really that I talk about are plays from Şengün.
Man.
some single, you know, a play for where Jalen Green, you see him explode with his first step quickness and get to the basket and dunk. And yeah, it's different. The way we're looking at the Rockets is obviously a little bit different. Even frankly than the Texans. By the way, I have not brought this up. This probably should have been in the first hour. So let me bring this little who texted this to me? Robert did. So on Pro Football Talk yesterday, I don't know if you saw the story or not. Lovie Smith doesn't plan on having Nick Caserio be involved in game day.
Does he know that he has no control over that?
Well, so I always knew that Lovie was not the one that you wanted. Most coaches are not going to be the coaches you want to hire if you plan on being involved in game day.
Yeah, they don't want
stuff.
To hear that.
And it's always been my idea that once I found out this about David Culley having to have him on the headset and all that, well, that's when I know that Josh McCown is being considered, because Nick Caserio, and to probably a lesser extent Jack Easterby, more Nick Caserio, he can have a certain amount of sway over the head coach because it's his first time. This is way, way different when you have a guy like Lovie Smith, because Lovie is like a veteran coach. Lovie's a dude, and you can't just tell him. He's not going to be okay with that. So when the pressure fell on the Texans, I think we both agree that happened, right? The pressure hit them with the Brian Flores lawsuit, and they realized the optics on this are terrible. I think that's what got Lovie the job. Once that happened, Nick Caserio had to know, Lovie's probably not going to be about all that me being on headset stuff.
Sorry, I was raising my hands in victory while you were talking about the Texans because of the conversation we had yesterday
What victory did you just have?
Baseball players taking to social media to defend their case has begun.
It has.
Walker Buehler. Please tell me how what we, the players, are asking for is crazy. Inflation happens. Markets rise. Money grows. Ask our owners. They know. Why would we agree to less than even inflation level income rises? Would you take that?
We have to take that.
Everyone
in the country takes that, Walker.
We can't fight that.
What are you talking about, Walker? Everyone takes that.
Yeah. What's he talking about?
Do you know who
you're
even talking
to?
What's
he talking about?
Do you know your audience?
Yeah.
Why is he bringing this fight to people who are getting scrubbed out by inflation anyway? Like, what does he think he's going to win here? What court of public opinion battle does he think he's winning?
Well, he's not winning the one on Twitter.
No, is it not happening for him? The reply section.
A lot of it's like, we don't care. You make a lot of money. Shut up. Stop it.
That's real life, though.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked about this yesterday. There was going to come a point where baseball players took to social media to defend themselves because they know what's coming down the pike. The fans are going to – they are the most accessible. In fact, the only ones that are accessible, because the owners aren't. They're going to get crushed for this. And, you know, it's time. It's time to rush to Twitter and tell everyone how it's not our fault. You should just, look, Walker, mute your replies. Don't tweet. Nothing good comes from tweeting to people about why you're not getting your money.
Hey, guys, am I right? Can you believe that we're getting screwed on this? We're not crazy for wanting this, right? We want to raise our pool from $25 million to $114 million. Well, doesn't seem crazy to you guys, does it?
Here it is. People dying from COVID, war going on, people struggling, need baseball's entertainment through these times, and players are getting $20 to $40 million per year, sure.
having trouble paying for gas, Walker?
I know.
This is what it
gas
is.
Gas price is going to be up to $5, Walker. You see what I'm saying? What are we going to be able to do? What, you guys get it, don't you?
What a mistake.
The general public is going to be like, come on, why? We don't care. Will y'all stop? Let us know when you get your games going again, but we definitely don't want to do that. All right. The Trilogy, Bun B, has now stepped into the building.
Oh, you don't want to touch those.
You don't even need those. Oh, okay. We're okay, just talking.
Wonderful, wonderful.
You can't. We can't even turn the headphones up.
Can I, so. Can I say he aged considerably during the pandemic? It does not look like it was good for you. Like
no, like you can 100%
sure
say
you
that.
Can say that.
Dell,
I think it's the mustache, Dell. Like you were.
It is 100% grown man mustache.
You were still very prepubescent the last time I came.
It's the mustache.
Plus,
he was through the glass when you see him, and he was. Like, Sports Map is aging, that's true.
No.
Seeing him through the glass might have been a plus on his side.
Yeah, it's no, it was. Like a filter. It's like an Insta filter.
It's like the, right.
It's like
the,
a snap filter.
The soap opera filter on
soft
the cameras.
Light.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
It still happens where sometimes, since you're a cinephile, you still, and on television, so who was famous? What was her name? It used to be the Bruce Willis show, the TV show, way back in the day. It was Bruce Willis.
Moonlighting.
And, yeah, Moonlighting. They had, I think she had in her contract where she had to have a different lighting, a soft lighting on her. That's what Dell had
that
in his contract.
That's
he had a soft lighting.
It's not on purpose. It's just dirty, but that's what it is.
It is dirty.
It's kind of
it's a good dirty.
Yeah.
It is a good dirty. So, Bun, last time that we talked to you, last time you were in studio, you were, obviously a legendary rapper, a guy who was
time.
A. Current or former? Well, I'm about to add to your resume.
Are you trying to compliment or insult?
No.
Which way are you
going? It is. You were. I don't know if you were.
I think I tried to compliment and it didn't come out.
No, you didn't compliment Dell.
This is a
pattern. He didn't say matured.
Woo!
He said
that mustache is doing a number on your face.
He said age considerably, not matured.
Well, no, you were very youthful.
Yeah.
Very spry.
Yeah. No, he's
getting
beat down for sure.
Well, it's the radio gig.
It is the radio gig.
Sucks all the joy out of you.
But you feel like I feel like you're. Younger, more spry than you've ever been now that you are a restaurateur.
That's fair.
You are currently about to be you're a headliner at the rodeo, but do you have more, like, are you the
Grand Marshal?
The Grand Marshal or no? Yes or no on that whole thing?
Of the rodeo?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say the Grand Marshal.
Is there such a thing?
No. It's not a parade.
Well,
although I was going to be the performer, so every year the rodeo does a featured performer at the parade.
Yeah.
And I was going to be that guy, but then, like, it was supposed to storm that day.
But you are now, though, at the rodeo, and you've got an entire takeover.
Yes, yeah. So March 11th, Black Heritage Day, Bumby's H-Town Takeover, which is still growing. So as of
I've heard it's not even put – yeah, it's not even put all the way together.
No, right? No. I mean, right now we have 9 featured performers with me. You have Lil Kiki, Lil Flip. Slim Thug, Paul Wall, Zero. You have Baby Bash, Frankie J, H-Town, the R&B group. And there's always one. I always leave one.
Female?
No, females are coming. They haven't been announced yet.
Okay.
Yes. But, gosh, I feel bad. I'm leaving somebody out. I'll come back to it.
It'll come to you during the break. So you got that. So you're doing that. And then also.
With at least 5 more people.
So this is going to be huge.
Yes.
This is all on one day?
Yes, in 1 hour. I only get 1 hour on stage.
How is that? Wait, what? 1 hour? How is that possible?
You'll see.
Okay.
Did you mention Big Pokey?
Yes, Big Pokey. Okay. There it is.
The maturity of Adele just going to the search function in Google and finding Big Pokey. So you got that. And I heard a cool rumor also from Culture Map that you... And I appreciate this with you because I know your love for documentaries, that you are creating a documentary of the whole event. Is that true?
Yeah. Now, it's not going to be a full length. It's not going to be a feature film.
Right.
Probably be about 15, 20 minutes. You know, but just, you know, an extended look behind the scenes of how this thing is kind of coming together.
So it's not just going to be like backstage in the event. We're talking about
nuts
and bolts.
Rehearsals. You
That's
know.
Awesome. That's I would want to see something like that. You sure it's just going to be 15 to...
Yeah, 20? Yeah. I mean, we're gonna have a lot of footage. We're not gonna be able to put it all on there. I think it would just be too much if you're just sitting there listening to us talk at rehearsal. I don't think that's what people.
How are you going to? But people would love to see what it looks like.
Well, what we will allow people to do is kind of see the formation. of how it all comes together, because some of this stuff happens in real time. We add things in real time.
Have you already been taping?
Yes.
So you're getting footage.
Today is Friday. We filmed Wednesday. I did my first sit down with my DJ, DJ Domination, who's the Ghetto Boys DJ and also the DJ from our radio show, and the band. The band is called Formaldehyde. They're Scarface's band. Uh-huh. That's the band that Scarface plays with when he does band performances. And I've known the lead guitarist, Corey, for many years. He's played on my albums. He's played on many people's albums in the city. So a lot of these riffs he already know because he actually played these riffs for people on their albums. But then just to watch him, like, you'll be able to see, like, us playing a song for him, literally his first time hearing that song and figuring out how to play the riff by ear.
Oh, like, wow. So you're going to have video
like
of
I
that.
I captured that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I've seen some docs, like, just basic docs about it. This may seem stupid, but I saw Steely Dan doc, and I'm like, let me just check it out. It's not very long. It's an hour. And watching what goes into behind-the-scenes music and the artists and how they played with, like, they're such perfectionists. They played with a ton of different bass players, guitar players, drummers. They switched out all the time. You might hear a studio recording, and it was not going to be the same band that went on tour. Just seeing the ins and outs of what takes place behind the scenes is extremely interesting to me. I can't wait to actually get to the Kanye doc just to watch that.
And then, I mean, this is the rodeo. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to this. So, I mean, outside of me just really putting together this performance and figuring out the logistics and how to coordinate the rivals and, you know, of all these different various artists, I'm going to have like maybe 14, 15 different artists performing with me that night. So I've got to make sure everybody's taken care of and situated. Plus, I've got the burgers. You know, I'm going to have Trill Burgers trilogy,
The Trill Burgers are going to be at the rodeo.
Yes. So, and that starts
the whole
Monday.
Booth?
Yeah. So we're in Restaurant Row. So it's a, you know, nice little build out that we're going to have.
You want to talk about you
legs.
Begging for burgers yesterday?
What's that?
You want to talk about how you were begging for burgers yesterday?
We were.
No, not we.
Lance.
You.
Well.
Lance.
Kind of us.
Lance.
You.
You're my friend. You never have to beg.
Nah, he was begging yesterday.
I was so hungry. I was
if
like,
you ever need a burger, you call me, and I will be more than happy to bring you a Trill Burger at 25% off.
There it is.
That's the businessman. That's the businessman. And you're a radio host. We'll talk about that coming up in a second. And, of course, we'll get to sports. It's 8:15 here on the bench. If you guys want to jump in, talk to Bun, talk to the sage one, Dell, a very mature Dell Olele. We will be here for you. Until 10 o'clock, 713.
I feel like he's my contemporary now. He's not like
he
the,
is.
He's not the intern kid.
I was never the intern kid.
That we don't know
he
whether
is
or not.
The intern kid, actually.
Maybe you didn't hear. Dell don't shine shoes anymore.
When you were here, I was never the intern kid.
I don't shine shoes no more. Keep him in, Henry. It's 8:16 here on the bench.
Dell's going to go get his shine box.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. The conversation continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
So Dell's running from the fact that he likes Evanescence and he
bowling
likes goth rock. He's running from that.
I don't like Bowling for Soup. I think it's funny that you continue to hit on that and you drop the Avril Lavigne on me. Like, you know what, Dell? That you like
There's nothing wrong with
you like a pop star. That was that's your age and became a big thing when you were a teenager.
You know
why wouldn't I like a pop star?
Okay, so here's the thing I did not know. Yeah, we may do some sports. We may not.
Why not? We got Rafael Stone coming up.
But we do have Rafael Stone, GM of the Rockets, coming up. This is something I didn't know that I found out on Twitter. The lead singer of Evanescence, what's her name?
Amy Lee.
I think this is who it is. I didn't realize.
No, he knows who it was.
Twitter. Yeah, he knows.
I know.
Twitter had a whole thing where. She's huge, and actually Evanescence is huge in the black community.
I didn't
as a
know
band.
That.
I did not know that. I'm pretty sure it was
you
Evanescence.
Sure it's or Paramore.
You're right, it's Paramore. It's not Evanescence. Paramore.
I think I can speak for the black community. I don't think it's either.
I swear to God,
I don't know if it's big.
It's not the Morrissey with the Mexican community, that's for sure.
That's another crazy one, too. Morrissey with the Mexican community, specifically in Los Angeles.
Yes.
The Smiths and Morrissey, which
and
almost
feels
random.
And I mean, hardcore, gangbanger, clown tattooed face guys.
And if you've ever listened to Morrissey, the message of the music does not feel on brand with what you're expecting from East Los, but it's true. The Morrissey thing has been a huge, huge thing there for a long time. But Paramore,
I don't think it's like big.
Just Google it.
I know what you're talking about. It's not even the lead singer's commented on it when she sees black fans at her shows. Like she talks about on Twitter, she says, "We love you guys coming out." It's not like it's big in the black community. It's just the black fans who show up are very
dude on Twitter
ardent about.
There were so many people saying they had no idea that it was such a big deal.
Well, if you're black and you're into Paramore, you got to stand on that. Right?
Yeah, and they're all
you run stand. From it. They're you're all gonna, know why you.
You're in the middle of two worlds. I feel like right.
Yeah.
I feel like your black friends won't understand, and your white friends maybe don't understand.
I'm like, what are you doing?
And like, what is that kind of like here?
Okay, is that kind of like so? You know the guy who straddled it very. I straddle it.
You don't.
Me and Bun straddle it. You don't.
Stop including yourself.
You run from it.
I'm a Radiohead fan.
Yeah,
I went to a Radiohead show. Many years ago.
They're brilliant. I always slept on them.
But it's direct.
I think it was me and my friend Marcus, and we were literally the only black people at the show.
And how did you like it?
I loved it. Radiohead is one of my favorite
bands. I don't run from it. Bun has made fun of me for liking Dance Gavin Dance on the air.
Oh,
so
right.
I don't run from that. People around the station know. I get tweets sent to me. I don't run from that.
But you have a diverse musical. All three of us have all very three diverse musical tastes.
To be fair. We could all end up at a concert and people would look at us and
know,
why are you here?
Bun schooled me on something that when I had him on my podcast, I did not know, for example, Skinheads, the original. I watched a doc based on what you said about this because I found a doc. Original Skinheads were not, there was nothing racial. And as a matter of fact,
Skinheads were anti-racist.
They were anti-racist.
Anti-fascist.
And they were big fans of two-tone music, which was two-tone meaning black and white with the community. Was it a Jamaican community that came? It was a Caribbean community that came into London. That was the original Skinheads. And there's Doc. I did not know that until you hit me to that.
Well, look at all these burgeoning scenes and like the punk scene in L.A., even with CBGBs, right? One week you could have the Ramones, the next week you could have Bad Brains, the week after that you could have Public Enemy.
Right.
Right? They're all kind of
I saw Public
anti-system,
Enemy with
right? They all operate under that angst anti-system operation.
Well, PE has always been that way though. PE was one of the first kind of bands.
So
of
the Ramones for that matter.
Have they really?
Yeah.
Well, because early 80s New York had a scene where hip hop was embraced, was like, and it was earliest brands of hip hop with the dance music scene when Basquiat and
it was
and
all counterculture.
It was all counterculture.
That was the thing, right?
Yeah.
They all created a safe space where people who were into things that were not accepted as the norm, right? This is where people were able to express their sexuality,
mm-hmm.
you know, and their viewpoints, their worldview, and people having this freedom. And shout out to Andy Warhol for really creating a really wild place, but also a safe space where some great art.
It was him. Yeah, it was him. So he was in that Basquiat, Madonna, Deborah Harry, Fab Five Freddy,
Yellow Underground, all of that stuff.
100%. And they would all go, like, they'd go Danceteria on Tuesdays. I've watched the docs on this, and it was actually on History, Evolution of Hip Hop, which is, I found it to be a brilliant look at hip hop through. A storytelling. I mean, he did a nice job. He's done that whole group and Russell. What's his name? The international. The guy who's the executive producer is a huge national comedian. Russell Peters.
Russell Peters. Yeah.
Yeah. That's his. He's the executive producer. That it's amazing. The storytelling that they've done on Evolution Hip Hop. You're featured in it. And
well, I could tell you who right here in Houston was in those rooms in New York back in the day. Lynn Wyatt.
Really?
Lynn Wyatt and Andy Warhol were very good friends. And the reason why is because they both were the only sober ones.
Is that right?
Yeah, so they were the only ones that weren't like
it
drinking
was a wild
heavily
time,
and
yeah.
doing a lot of heavy drugs and stuff. So they were just kind of in the corner watching everybody do everything.
So we got Rafael Stone coming up. We got lots that we can get into.
Yes.
And I want to make this as varied and fun a show as possible.
I need to know show etiquette.
Okay.
Can I bring up the dunk show?
Oh yes. The dunk contest?
Yes.
Oh, yes. There is no etiquette on not bringing it up.
I just want to make sure.
Yes.
I want to be good with your guests. I don't want to come here and just start fronting.
No. You 100% can. I think Rafael Stone is going to be good with that. So Rafael Stone, the GM of the Houston Rockets, going to join us next here at 8:30. We're going to get to him, Bun. We're going to get to a lot of different things. But we do want to kind of reset the Rockets, quote-unquote, second half of the season because – there's a lot to be gleaned from how you finish the season and you build momentum into the next. And we'll visit with Fellstone about that, also the Dennis Schroeder trade, and much more. When we come back, you're listening to ESPN 97.5, 92.5. I want to talk about Aqueduct Plumbing. If you need plumbing help, make sure you go to thebenchplumbing.com, thebenchplumbing.com. It's a chance for you to get someone to take care of your leaky faucet, your leaky shower. Maybe you are worried that you see your toilets tend to be going down and down, lower and lower. You could have a leak underneath your home, and you need a hydrostatic test. They can do that for you. You have a clogged sewage system. You have a clogged garbage disposal. These are all things that my friends over at Aqueduct Plumbing are going to take care of you with. But they do it quicker, more efficiently. But mostly they do it at affordable prices, and they do it with trustworthy service. They're not going to try to hit you with prices that are outrageous or things you don't need done. This is a company that does work the way it's supposed to be done for the right price, unlike the people that I've used in the past that have crushed me. That's why I want to tell you to help you so that you don't get snuck by these other people with clever phone numbers. Make sure that you go to thebenchplumbing.com, thebenchplumbing.com.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7, that's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's great. I don't know. Hey, I think you should shave the mustache. That's just me.
That's what I'm saying. 8:30 right now. Joining us right now is the general manager of your Houston Rockets, Rafael Stone. Rafael, it's me, Lance Erline, along with Dell and Bun B. And we appreciate you joining us after the All-Star break. First and foremost, how was the All-Star break? Did you get to spend some time with the family?
Yeah, I got a couple of days off, so it was nice.
Just a couple?
Just a couple, yeah. We did something like 8 cities in 9 days or something crazy. It was a hectic schedule, but a couple of those were personal days, so it was nice.
Now Bun has a question for you. I want to get this out of the way first, right off the bat. Let Bun ask his question of you, Rafael, and then we'll move on to more direct Rocket related stuff.
Rafael, how you doing, my man?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. All right, so we're post All Star weekend now. I know it was rough for Jalen that weekend. Knowing this kid, does he shake this off and try to hit the reset button, or mentally does he use this as ammunition for the rest of the season? Like, what's his approach to turning around the perception of how he performed at the All-Star game?
I think it's a little bit of both. I will say he was the leading scorer in the Rising Stars game, and he only played one game. So the basketball piece went really well for him. He had 20 points in one game.
Right.
I think Cade had 19 and 2. So it was the second leading scorer. The dunk contest, I think, not so great. He won't make excuses. What I will say is that the schedule was insane. We played Wednesday and Thursday back-to-back games. He played the Rising Stars on Friday. The NBA insisted that he practice his dunks in advance. I was with him in the gym till 1:30 a.m. Friday night. Then they had him doing media at 9:30 in the morning, Saturday morning. And then he did the dunk contest Saturday night. I know he was frustrated that he didn't make the dunk, the first one. And kind of part of, I think, what makes Jalen interesting is that, he's not particularly interested in not being great. So he thought that was a great dunk. He wanted to make that dunk, and he was just going to stick with it. And that is a little bit of insight into his personality. So
right.
What I'd say is that he'll use a little bit of both. I also think he's got a confidence where some things that bother some guys maybe don't bother him as much. I think in the context of things, a dunk contest shouldn't bother anyone. So I think he'll shake it off. But I also think, you know, everything for him is a little bit of motivation. I do think he truly wants to be great. And so I think he'll just load it up.
He didn't look very, very much emotional in the moment. Like, he didn't seem frustrated. You know, he kept going for it, kept going for it.
Probably
and good. I do want that in an athlete.
Well, I think he
right?
would have. I think he would have easily won if he had switched to a different dunk. It is interesting, maybe insight into his personality. He had something that he thought was going to. Well, we saw what it was going to be.
It would have
like,
been
like it would have been a monster dunk if he had done it. And that is interesting. You're right, Rafael. Maybe it's a little look into his personality that he wanted to do something that was spectacular and was willing to risk the whole contest for it.
He wanted to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I do think if there's one thing that's the most fundamental, well, he really has a work ethic like that we know, and he really, really does want to be great, you know. But, you know, and I do think, again, it's a dunk contest. Who really cares? But I do think that I'm, you know, the way it played out, I think was very consistent with those two things that we've learned about him this year.
Tell us about the trade that brought Dennis Schroeder to the Houston Rockets. He did a nice job right out of the gates. Played really, really well. What was how active were you? How busy? How chaotic was it before trade deadline for you guys, either the day of or the week leading up to it?
You know, we're always really active, and we were this year. I think, you know, part of the job is just making sure that there's no stone goes unturned. No pun intended. And so, you know, we call every team multiple times leading into the trade deadline, just to make sure that we've thought through things, you know, with various teams and really have tried to find ways to improve our team. And, you know, obviously it takes two to tango. So, you know, you're hey, what are you guys trying to do? How happy are you with your roster? Is there a particular change that might be interesting to you? Those types of conversations we're having multiple times with every team. I'd say we have a roster of guys that we feel really good about and where they're at. They're all developing, so that's kind of it is unusual to have this many guys on a team all developing, but we do like their development arc, and so we weren't interested in moving, you know, the vast majority of our guys. That doesn't say that there wouldn't be some deal in which you do it. Like, that's the nature of our business. There's no perfect security for anyone, but from that context, there was less to do this year than in past years where we had a bunch of guys that were like, well, we really like where they're at. They really fit our team. You know, absent some amazing proposal, we're not doing anything there. So that complicated things just in terms of, you know, there wasn't maybe as much action possible as in past years, but we were very busy.
Rafael Stone, GM of the Houston Rockets, joins us right now. I want to ask you a follow-up to that. You know, I've heard it said before from a general manager that when you get close to the trade deadline, one of the interesting things is you find out how the league views your roster and different players on your roster based on some of the phone calls you end up getting. Did you find that to be the case? Did you find that there were certain players or that you found out how the league valued certain, maybe in a positive or negative way, certain players on your roster?
I think that's I haven't heard that before. I think that is potentially insightful. Yeah, you definitely get feedback. The names that get mentioned the most, you take note of. I think that there are multiple reasons, though, that people might mention some names. And so you have to at least internally think through why it is that multiple teams are interested in this guy or more interested in this guy than they are that guy and everything else. But yeah, I think we gained some insight into our roster. One nice thing is we did have teams ask about a lot of our guys. I do think that there are a lot of guys on our roster that teams asked about, and you know, we view that as a positive.
Rafael, we talked earlier in the show about Kelly Olynyk, who played well for you guys last year and moved on in free agency. And what is the value of having veterans on the roster who you know can play? Now, you guys have projected certainly about your current roster, what you think they'll be. But what about guys who you know what they are? How valuable will that be maybe in this offseason or going forward to find guys who are legitimate legit players who you can pair around your guys that are still developing?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you put the right people into those spots, then it can really help the developmental process for your younger guys. I do think that it is hard if there are five guys out there who are doing everything for the first time, and four of them make the right decision on a given play, and the fifth is just lost, everything can break down. And to the extent that you have a veteran guy who's going to make the right play 99 out of 100 times, that can be something that can help the other guys on the court, or two veteran guys or whatever. And I don't mean like, there's both play creation and then there's kind of play reads. And play creation is very hard. In the NBA, that's, you know, a guy who can distort the defense, who can make something out of nothing. There's not a whole lot of them. Everybody can do it to a certain extent, but there's not a whole lot of guys who can do it just play in and play out. And so one of the things we're hoping with some of these young guys is that they can become those guys. But then on the backside of that, there's, okay, somebody did something that distorted the defense. Now I have to read it. And a lot of that is repetition and know-how. And so if you've got some guys who can do a little bit of the former and are really, really good later, I think it can be very supportive for your younger guys, and it can facilitate the development.
And a lot of people are shocked that Eric Gordon didn't move. A lot of people. And not that there wasn't value. I mean, I could definitely see value in having an Eric Gordon on my roster if Absolutely. I were a veteran team. There's no question. Can you talk about what Eric Gordon brings to your team specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's – well, A, our guys love him. Our coaches love him. Eric has been – we asked Eric this past summer to fill a certain role for us. He's filled a lot of roles for the Rockets over the years. And we asked him to kind of be that player that I just described for us. And he's done it to a T, and that doesn't just mean on the court in games, which he's definitely done, but also off the court in practice and exhibiting kind of how you work out and in the weight room, how you prepare as a shooter. All of those things are really valuable. And so for us, Eric just fits, and he plays basketball the way I think organizationally we believe basketball should be played. And so Eric just fits us really well. Again, it doesn't mean that he'll be here forever or that there wasn't some scenarios under which there might have been a deal done, probably one that would have made everyone happy, the other team, us, him, everybody. Those are the best ones. But in this situation, we didn't find anything like that. And there were a number of teams that asked about him, so I don't want to suggest that he wasn't somebody teams are really interested in. But at the kind of price level, we just felt like he was more valuable to us than what we would have been able to get back. And ultimately, that I think is the judgment you're always making. And I don't think it's as simple as trade someone because you can trade them for something positive. That's not. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the job. The job is to try and figure out how to get to an endpoint, and you don't just need kind of future assets. You need current ones too, and you need to make sure that the team can function internally and can be cohesive and everything else. And we want to set, you know, our players and our coaches up for success. And you know, for us, I think Eric is an important part of that.
That's Rafael Stone, general manager of the Houston Rockets. You guys go tonight in Orlando looking for win number 16. It's kind of I always think it's it's a second season. It's a chance to build momentum into next year. Is that how you look at that, Rafael? It's a chance to really, after the break, reset, play your best basketball, and do you see that as a chance to springboard into next year, or do you look at them completely separately?
No, I think that it can go a lot of different ways, but I certainly think that's something that does happen with some teams. And it certainly is possible with ours. From my perspective, this whole year is about learning, about our players as individuals, as a group, and, you know, and trying to figure out how to correctly build it on a going forward basis. I do think that these games will be very important for me, just in terms of evaluating our individual players, our group, who needs to be here, who needs to improve over the summer, if there are additions that we need to look at making over the summer, all of those things. So, excuse me, I do think it's actually a very important time for us. And hopefully we stay healthy. We did struggle with that a little bit the first stretch, but hopefully we stay healthy and, you know, and guys continue to improve. I do feel good that we saw a lot of internal growth and improvement the first portion of the year.
Rafael, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. Go get him in Orlando tonight.
All right, man. I appreciate you.
Houston Rockets general manager Rafael Stone. Rockets take on Orlando tonight. And it's my job to tell you about where you can watch that game. And, well, you can come to my patio. I'll have it on Texas Custom Patio's patio. I'll be watching out there with the kids. I know Mason will be my big hardcore basketball fan. Loves to go out there and watch games. But then watch YouTube out there. I will take over and watch Everton on the way to the top six at some point. We're hoping. Or avoid relegation. That is something I can watch out on my patio. Have friends over and have drinks. Have steaks. Just do something with the kids out there. You can. There's so much you can do on your own patio. And when I say a patio, that almost doesn't. It's really an outdoor living space or an outdoor kitchen. It's an outdoor oasis. It's not just a patio. Go to TexasCustomPatios.com, or better yet, see the patio that I talk about all the time, my own patio. Go to TCPLance.com. Go look at the before and the after, and you will see what I mean when I tell you that they can completely transform your outdoor living space into something that you didn't even think was possible. And yet they do it all the time. The pricing, the performance, the way that they go about it, the value it adds onto your home and the value it adds onto your life, all available through TexasCustomPatios.com. Live your best life. Turn your house into a home. TexasCustomPatios.com.
ESPN 97.5. You found the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
With the... All right, well, actually, let's just bring it up on air. So somebody asked in Twitch, asked about you playing with the transplants. I'd never heard of the transplants, and you said, yeah, who are the transplants?
So the transplants was a group...
it's Bun B, by the way.
Hey, how you guys doing? It was a group consisting of Paul Wall, Travis Barker, a Blink-182, and Skinhead Rob, who is an artist, singer, et cetera. Everybody knows him on the West Coast. And so they came together because they were all really good friends. And they came together to form a recording group. But because they were all signed to different record labels, the labels couldn't agree. It was really Travis's label arguing with Paul Wall's label as to who would get to distribute the album. They couldn't agree on it, so I don't think it ever came out.
And then I had listened to a podcast where you talked about somebody brought it to my attention, said, hey, this is really interesting. The insight that, like, you did, it was going to be you, an Outkast, and 3-6 Mafia. I think all three of you in conjunction were going to do a collaboration. But then I guess this happens a lot of times when labels just can't come to an agreement, or sometimes they do. How does that work when different people from different labels want to do features? You're gonna do a feature on someone's...
Hold on, let me go back. Yeah, go ahead. Correct myself, because I'm thinking of Expensive Taste. The Transplants was a rock group together with Skinhead Rob, Travis Barker, and then Tim Armstrong.
Okay, so not Paul.
Yeah, not Paul.
But you played with them, Transplants?
Yes, I did play with the Transplants. Yeah. I played with both. I recorded with Expensive. Taste was the group that...
But you have rock groups you like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I'm not necessarily rock. I'm actually more into punk music. Okay. So, like, Dead Kennedys is probably one of my favorite groups.
Tremendous.
You know, Sex Pistols. I was a real big Sex Pistols fan in high school and couldn't figure out why. I couldn't figure out for the life of me why I liked that group.
That's interesting, because I think everyone goes through that when you have something like, you don't know why you like a certain girl or person, somebody that you're, that what this doesn't feel, but you know, you just, you feel
drawn.
And it's
not for the traditional reasons, right? It's not because like you're not attracted to this girl because she's the prettiest girl in school.
No. There's a cheerleader, something. There's something. There's something about it. Del, when was it when you first?
I knew he was
the Alanis Morissette thing. Were you six?
Is that supposed to be an insult to someone?
No,
like
it's not. She's talented.
I've never
she's
had
Canadian.
I've never had.
I was just gonna say, is Del Canadian?
No.
Am I missing something?
He's got some Canadian vibes.
He mentioned Avril. He mentions Alanis Morissette. I've never had a conversation with you about Alanis Morissette. Why is that?
Is Avril Canadian too?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah,
she is, and that's why he. That's this is
white
why.
Skater girls or emo kind of girls are kind of Canadian. I've noticed that
well,
do music.
Well, that's one
that do music.
Yeah.
Well, so are the rappers are emo because Drake's from.
Drake's from Toronto, yeah. too.
The Weeknd is from Toronto.
It's true.
Oh, he is, too?
Yeah.
Party Next Door. These are all very emo guys.
That's true.
You know who's not?
I'm emo, but from Long Beach, California.
Yeah, you're Long Beach.
You'll be an expat in about 5 years.
Okay.
/ Daytona.
That's true, though.
So you, a guy that I'm really interested, I've never asked you a lot of these questions I've always wanted to ask, because you've had run-ins with so many different famous people, but a guy who I think is one of the most interesting from a musical standpoint is Pharrell. And I've watched, it's funny, I ran into a Nardwuar. I never even knew who Nardwuar was.
Oh,
and
you go down the rabbit hole
with Nardwuar. Oh my God. I was in a rabbit hole for about a week and a half with Nardwuar videos. And I can't even explain. He's a Canadian man who talks like this. But his shtick is that he knows stuff about you and he gives you gifts that you think, how can he possibly know this? And have you ever heard about how does he do his background where he's giving people...
He doesn't give that up. That's the thing. He doesn't give it up. But
he shocks people. Rappers love him. And the first one that I think that got him the most notoriety was Nerd, and specifically Pharrell. And then Pharrell told Jay-Z. I'm watching the one with Young Pharrell because I was really into Young Pharrell when
Define
I found him.
Define Young Pharrell because 50-year-old Pharrell will still be Young Pharrell.
Exactly.
Right?
So I'm talking about late 90s Pharrell, and he was actually doing stuff even before then. Which yes. I didn't know he did Rump Shaker. He was a producer on that when he was in high school.
Yes, with Teddy Riley.
High school he was doing that. That's incredible.
No, some people are just born to do things. And Pharrell's a different beast and always has been a different beast within the musical community.
Skater community.
Yeah, but I mean the energy from him is it's always extremely positive. I've never seen him frown. I've never seen him upset or
you
argue.
You spent expensive time?
I've
I mean, extensive time.
With, yeah, time yeah, I've recorded with him, but the music never came out. I have two songs with Pharrell I've never released.
Why not?
Because Pharrell offered me this music, offered it to me, and I was in the...
Beats, hooks, sounds, what is it?
Yeah, well, it's... Well, he produced the songs. He and I worked on one of the hooks, the other hook I created by myself. But, no, it was really like, I'm giving you these songs. And when you're in a position to take full advantage of it, and
so
you know,
you still could,
exactly. But I wasn't in a deal at the time that would have allowed me to fully take advantage of having a Pharrell record, right? So it was just like, let's just wait until we could, because I mean, I listened to the stuff, you know, not too long ago. It's pretty timeless records, you know. And the one of them I never would have done ever remotely had approached a song like that. And that was like the first thing he was just like, we're coming out of the comfort zone. I want you to rap to this. And I was like, how the fuck am I?
Ooh. Sorry. Noah, hit the button. Hit the button. Twice. Well, you got to listen.
All right, so sorry, guys.
Yeah, that's right. You got to listen to the show.
Too late.
Hit the button.
Oh, God. Well, that's an FCC fine for me.
That's right. Keep going.
No,
keep going.
But I just, I had no idea how to approach that. And, I mean, he was just like, look, it's not the average song for you, so you can't approach it in the way you would normally approach it. Look at it like this.
But that's fun that somebody takes you out of your comfort zone.
I thought you were about to hit it, too.
I know.
No, that's it is.
Fun.
It is.
Yeah.
No, it is. And I think that's the beauty of him, right? If you listen to Neptune's production, most of it is unconventional.
That's why I like it.
It's not typical rap music when they produce rap songs. It's not typical R&B music when they produce R&B. Rock music, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very unique approach to musical production. And it's kind of like a Nardwuar approach in the sense that they take something that you don't necessarily concentrate on about yourself. Like they were the ones that told Snoop, you need to sing more. Pharrell's like, you need to sing more. You actually have a good singing voice. Now, Snoop sings all the time on his record.
Many artists sing all the time now.
Yeah, well, auto-tune helps. But, yeah. But Snoop doesn't necessarily utilize auto-tune. Snoop's actually singing on record.
Because he came right here. But that was Pharrell, or was that... Because there was some of that.
Well, he did, and I don't know if you remember. There's a Snoop record called Bush, and it's one of the least talked about albums, and it's literally entirely produced by Pharrell.
And I need to check out the whole thing.
It's a harken back to like 80s like kind of group, because like Charlie Wilson,
Pharrell is singing. Charlie Wilson
is on at least four hooks. Stevie Wonder is playing the harmonica on this album. It's literally when I do gumball or I'm taking like long extensive drives, it's my soundtrack. Hmm. If you have long open stretches, and you know, like if you got to ride from Houston to Dallas, download Snoop Dogg's Bush album and listen to it. You don't have to be a smoker to enjoy it.
Do you know that
it
album?
Does help though?
Del?
No,
no one does. It's very why? It was very low pro. It was very obscure. It's the one with Sexual Seduction.
Del?
See? It wasn't featuring Alanis Morissette, so obviously it's no frame of reference.
Or Dance Gavin Dance. So sorry, don't know it.
You know that song?
Yes, I watched the documentary on
Facebook. Everybody knows.
Yeah. Why are you, everyone?
To remind me.
Why are you going to Atlanta? It's like not a very popular
song. That wasn't a good one.
It's my Gallagher hammer.
I got to stand with him on that because I know that song too.
No, so everyone knows that one. That was a monster hit. So we don't have a minute. Del, give me this. Who's the most, if Pharrell's the most creative musically, I think he might be, or takes from the most sources of, who is somebody that you could pull from in sports that you think is the most creative person in sports?
As far as?
I don't know. Put it up for you actually know
I'll give
somebody.
You a deep cut. Andy Ellsberg, the cap guy for the Heat.
Why?
The way he maneuvers he's pretty spectacular at setting up deals and, because you have to do it a certain way for all the money to work out. You got to sign a guy at this point.
It is an art.
Yeah. I mean, Rafael, it wasn't the question we're going to ask, but the way you structure deals and when you have them signed in free agency will actually determine if you can sign a guy or not. He's looked at as one of the best in the biz. He's just the guy who got the big three under the cap.
GMs are producers. In a way, you've got to manage all these different personalities, but being able to pull this together, knowing what, like, there are so many things that you have to do to put an organization together.
A lot of
money,
parts.
Personnel, a lot of moving parts. I would think that's very similar to being a producer. I would think. Let's break it right here. We come back just a little off the, we just wanted to go off the, you know,
off the
Texan salary cap. If you want to get to franchise tags, that's boring. We got got a couple guys in here who can talk about a lot of things. So we're going to do that today, especially in the last hour. We're going to freestyle. If you guys want to jump in, 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. That's Bun B. I'm Lance Erline. That's Del Ololay. And Noah's learning some very
important lessons.
And his first day as a producer with Tyler gone.
Nah, he's done stuff for other shows.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
But those shows didn't
count.
That's
mine. I got to eat that L. That's my L.
That's all right. But it was your test, and you failed. If this were Squid
Spectacularly.
Game.
Spectacularly.
If this were Squid Game, you get a bullet in the head. But it's not. Luckily, we just laugh about it.
ESPN 97.5.